Our scripture for today picks up after the Beatitudes, which we covered last week, which was like drinking from a fire hose. There's an awful lot to it. We're going to move at a slightly more leisurely pace today. Let's begin by reading Matthew 5, 13 through 20. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly, I tell you, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter or the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Therefore, anyone who sets aside one of the least of these commands and teaches others accordingly will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. May the Lord bless the reading of his word. When we talk about salt and light and the law, we oftentimes take the little pericope, that little phrase that works oh so nicely together, and we pull it out, and we hold it on its own, and we read it on its own, and we talk about it on its own. But Matthew, when he compiled this gospel, he put things together for a reason. There was a point. But often when we look, especially at the Sermon on the Mount, we treat it like Proverbs, right? Proverbs where you read this phrase and it stands all on its own. He who spares the rod spoils the child, but he who loves him is careful to discipline him. I memorized that one as a child. A little bit of justification, I guess, in my own mind for the results of my actions. But the reality is that it hangs together. When my children were small, we used to get these I Spy books all the time. They were great little books. I loved them. Because here's the thing. You would look at them and you would think, oh, that's just a collection of odd junk. And your child would have to find like three yellow buttons. And I was horrible at helping my children with this game because I'm colorblind. And they would go, no, Dad, that's green. But here's the thing. What I noticed as time went on was that as I looked at each picture, I started to realize there were commonalities throughout. The things were actually interconnected. And when you look at this I Spy picture, one of the things that pops out is the circles. Everywhere there are circles. Round is everywhere. You cannot look at Mickey Mouse without seeing round. Round ear, round here, round nose, round face. And that round just keeps getting repeated over and over and over. And when we move to our passage today, and we hold it in light with first the Beatitudes, then salt and light, and then the law, and then next week we're going to start talking about some other things. When you hold it together and you say, what do these things mean connected together? You begin to get a different vision of what it's all about. So we're going to talk today about salt. We're going to talk about light. We're going to talk about God fulfilling the law and the prophets through Jesus. Now, salt comes in a lot of different forms. Have you noticed that? You know, I'm a big fan of the TV show Good Eats, and Alton Brown is always using kosher salt for his recipes. But did you know that kosher salt and table salt, when you measure a teaspoon, there are actually different levels of sodium in the two? Because kosher salt is this salt over here that you see in the bottom right hand, and it's light and it's flaky. And so when you measure a teaspoon of that, there's actually less sodium chloride in that than the nice rectangular table salt, which is much more dense, that we use. So if you're looking to reduce your sodium, that's one way you can do it. Now, it doesn't do much, right? I mean, it does a little bit. But it's still something. Notice also, some of that salt doesn't look all that white. In fact, in the bottom left-hand corner, that salt almost looks pink. And in the top right, that almost looks like dirt. But it's all salt. Just has different colors associated with it. Now, imagine, if you could, salt that didn't taste salty. What would that be like? That'd be just ridiculous, right? It would be like grabbing an ice cube to put in your drink and having it warm up your drink. There's no point in salt that isn't salty. And then Jesus says, imagine taking a light and putting it under, well, in our translation it says bowl, but actually basket would be a better translation, okay? And just to be clear, what they would do is they would take in the center of the house and they would have some sort of pedestal because oil is expensive. It was expensive then, it's expensive now. And they would light these oil lamps and they would place it up high so that the light could go to the largest area possible within the house. And Jesus says, you are the light of the world. No one lights a lamp and then places a basket over it, right? Number one, light that doesn't illuminate is pointless. But just to illustrate Jesus' sense of humor a little more, light under a basket is stupid. I mean, it's a fire hazard. You are asking to burn the house down. And fires in that time could devastate a city. Rome burned because when the fire started, it spread from house to house to house to house to house to house to house, and it just kept going. Do you know who was the modern precursor for fire code in the world, really? Benjamin Franklin. In Philadelphia, when they were building, he got passed into code that all of these beautiful row homes that are in Philadelphia, these townhouses, every single one of them has two bricks separating house A to house B. They are connected physically, but there is a double brick wall dividing them, because they want to keep the fire from passing through the walls. Salt without saltiness is ridiculous. It serves no useful purpose. Light that doesn't illuminate serves no purpose. And in fact, it's dangerous. Ironically, if you combine salt and light, you get the modern trend of the Himalayan salt lamps. I don't know why I mentioned that, but it just struck me as odd when I started searching for pictures of salt and light. I found a salt light. It doesn't illuminate much, does it? It doesn't make my food taste better. I mean, it'll keep me from tripping on my way to the restroom at night, but that's about it. And Jesus is saying in this passage over and over, you are the salt of the world. You are the light of the world. He's saying this to his disciples. He's saying it to us, to those who follow him, saying, hey, there is something distinctive about you. How does that connect to the Beatitudes? Well, last week we talked about blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are so moved by what is wrong in the world that they are motivated to do something about it. For example, the mother who lost her child to drunk driving, in their grief, they move to a state of mourning, which is different because grief is the feeling. Mourning is grief with legs. And she started MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Is that salt with flavor? Yeah. Blessed are the peacemakers. Those who work for peace. Again, they're fulfilling a purpose. They're doing something wonderful. Blessed are the meek, those who recognize that they need God, that they are not sufficient in and of themselves, because they're the ones who will inherit it all. There is meaning and purpose behind these points. And then Jesus moves on to talking about the law and the prophets. And he basically says, not one letter of the law, not even one little stroke. And in some translations, you'll see not one jot, not one dot, not one tittle. Do you know what a tittle is? Tittle is a part of the letter in the Hebrew language. You know how we have fonts that are, well, for example, my font up there that says Law and Prophets. We call that a sans serif font. Sans meaning without, and serif, you know when you look in your hymnal or your Bible and you see like an L and it comes down and then it's got this little jit that pops up? That's the tittle. That's the seraph. Jesus is saying the law is critical. I'm not replacing the law. I'm not changing the law. I'm saying we're going to fulfill the law to the fullest degree, to the nth degree, to that tiniest little dot. We're going to fulfill it. And we fulfill it not by keeping the exactness of the law like these Pharisees have been doing, right? Because the Pharisees, they were careful to measure exactly how many leaves of coriander, which we would call cilantro. They would measure out every little cilantro leaf because they were supposed to tithe 10%. They would count it out exact. They were very careful to fulfill every letter of the law. Mom didn't say no, so it must be okay. We're going to talk next week about a number of the different commands. One of the commands was, Jesus says, you've heard not to swear an oath on heaven or earth, but I tell you, let your yes be yes, your no be no. See, in that culture of that time, when you would swear an oath, the magnitude of what you would swear on was how seriously you had to keep it. So what do we do when we put people in the court system as judges and lawyers, or we put them in Congress or in our state legislature? We have them stand there, we have them put their hand on a Bible, and we have them swear an oath. Why do we have them put their hand on the Bible? Because that is a continuation of that philosophy that what you swear upon is what binds you. So in Jesus' day, if they wanted to swear an oath that they could get out of easily, they would swear it upon the hair of their head, because hairs are fine, simple, easy to break. You would never swear it on earth, because that's God's footstool. It had to have to be a really big deal, and if you broke that oath, it would be a massive deal. And you would never, ever swear on heaven unless it was the most important thing you could swear upon. But Jesus is saying, you know what? Fulfilling the letter of the law here while breaking the spirit, it's not good. It's pointless. It becomes salt that's lost its saltiness. It becomes light that doesn't illuminate. It serves no good purpose. So he says, in that case, let your yes be yes, let your no be no. And Jesus is saying here that, yeah, we've got the law, we've got the prophets, but I have not come to abolish it. I've come to fulfill it. Those who follow me will not just fulfill the letter, but they go beyond to the spirit, the intent behind it. The idea that there is more than just exactly what it says. You know, many of you have had to deal with attorneys in your life. We have some former attorneys in our congregation. One of the things they teach you as an attorney is how to read the exact letter of the law in order to achieve the goals of your client, right? We see this all the time, right? Well, technically, what the law says is this. I didn't violate that. And this is what Jesus is very much going after in his day and time. The idea that they were fulfilling God's law to the letter, but they never once got the bigger, more important picture of the spirit of it. I'll show you just a little bit of what the Torah looks like. And so when he says, not one little dot, not one little tittle, the smallest character in the Hebrew language is the yod. And the yod, right here, and you can see just this tiny little, tiniest, tiny little line. He says, not even that will pass away until everything is fulfilled. My favorite cartoon of all time is Calvin and Hobbes. It has caused me no end of joy. And I found this one. Goodness, you're filthy, Mom says. Get into the tub. And he says, I obey the letter of the law, if not the spirit. And the next thing you see is Mom shouting, hey, I don't hear any water running. Nuts. And this is where I want to challenge you. How often do we do this in our lives? How often do we take these things that Jesus told us and we parse out to get the meaning that works best for us in the moment? We do it all the time. We do it all the time. We take advantage of the fact that we know God will forgive us all the time, right? You get cut off by that person driving the Jeep with the jacked up tires. Jerk! right? Oh, God will forgive me. We're going to talk about anger next week. That'll be a fun one. Scott McKnight is a professor at Northern Seminary in Chicago, and he wrote this wonderful book called The Jesus Creed. And it looks at the law coming from Moses and the prophets, and it looks at Jesus and Jesus' statement that I came to fulfill the law. And then he says, wait a sec, there's this passage in Matthew where a rich guy comes to Jesus and said, what is the greatest commandment? And what does Jesus say? You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your strength, with all of your mind or might, depending on your translation. It connects to this Jewish thing called the Shema. You shall love God with everything. And then Jesus goes on, and the second is almost like a mirror image of it. It's love your neighbor as you love yourself. In this, all of the law and prophets are fulfilled. And McKnight says, listen, this Jesus creed of love God, love your neighbor. Love God. Who is your neighbor? Then that's the following question. And Jesus says, well, there's this guy. And he gets ambushed on the road to Jericho. And he's beat up. And the priest walks up, sees him, makes sure his shadow doesn't touch this guy because he's probably going to die. Because if your shadow touches someone who's dead, you become ritually unclean. And continues on his way to Jericho. A scholar comes, sees, whoa. Make sure my shadow doesn't touch that dead body, and continues on. And then the despised Samaritan comes up and sees him, has compassion on him. Compassion's a love word. You know that, right? It's actually similar to the word mourn in the Beatitudes. It is to be moved deeply to action, to care for someone to the point of doing something about it. Compassion. He was moved to compassion. He reached down, cared for him. Took him to a place where he could be cared for, gave money to have him cared for, and promised that if their expense of caring for him was too much, that next time through he would make up the difference. Jesus then said, very simply, which one of those three was the man's neighbor? The answer, the one who cared for him. Love God, love others. In that, all of the law is fulfilled. I was really good at parsing the law as a kid. I really was. And I used to talk my mom in circles. I swear, to this day, it is a miracle that I am not permanently black and blue on my buttocks. I don't know how many times my mom said, I hope someday you have a kid just like you. My wife must have been good because God has not punished her with that. But I could find every little fine delineation of how to, well, but mom, don't you love that tone? But mom, you said this. Well, that's not what I meant, but it's what you said. But it's not what I meant. See, Jesus is saying right here what God meant in all of the law, in all of the instructions. Love God. Love each other. It all gets reduced down to really, if we want to take it to one thing, love. Love. The Pharisees and scribes of Jesus' day had thousands of rules. Every time something new was created, going even to this day, they have to understand. Because one of the injunctions in the Big Ten, the Decalogue, honor the Sabbath. Take a day off from your work and rest, just as God did in creating, right? Good. So how far can a good Jew rollerblade on the Sabbath without it becoming work? You see, the Pharisees had figured out, okay, you can walk this distance without it becoming work, but if you go two steps beyond that, you've now crossed into the line of work. We keep inventing new things. The bicycle was invented. They had to figure out, well, how far can you bicycle without it becoming work? Light switches were invented. They would cast a spark, but casting a spark is an act of work. So now what are we going to do? We had to invent kosher light switches that didn't cast a spark. It never ends if all you care about is the letter of the law. It never ends. And it's so much easier to just love. So, just love. Love God. Love each other. Love the strangers. Love the people who annoy you. When the person cuts you off in traffic, find a way to love them as you call them a jerk. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. I'm still working on that myself. When you correct someone, correct them with love. When you feel anger and you want to respond, respond in love. Doesn't mean you have to forgive everything. Doesn't mean you turn into a doormat. But there is always a way to do it in a loving manner. So that's my challenge. To live in the fulfillment of the law, not by the letter. Because Jesus promises when you do that, you will be like salt. Boing! What's salt do? What does salt do to food? More than anything else, it enhances the flavor. And that's what love does.